This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
9 FM or 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio, you can always keep up to date. Download the Odyssey app. Free to download. Free to listen. All you have to do is download the app in your app store. Sign up for 92.9 FM ESPN, and you can listen anytime, anywhere on demand. My company, or beg your pardon, George Ruggiero producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company, of course, today is David Cobb. Writes about college football, college basketball for CBS Sports on Twitter, on X, at David W. Cobb. Cobb, good day, sir. Oh, no. Hold on. All right, let's see. All right, George, I'm going to walk you through it, what I think the problem is. Do we have Adobe up, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. On the Zoom app, do you see where it says audio, like the with the microphone?
Yes, sir.
See the arrow?
Yep.
Click on the arrow, and then when it brings up speakers, do like same as system. Is that coming up for you?
Yes, sir. Got it.
Yeah, same as system. All right, Cobb, let's try it again. Are you there?
Hey, Jeffrey.
There we go.
There we go. Technical difficulty.
Troubleshooting on the air, y'all.
Wow.
Calling haters like me now.
Live on the air.
We are professionals.
Yes, absolutely. That was always my trick when I'd, you know, when you're the quarterback calling the play, if you forget it, like it's one thing if the left guard forgets it, like you can just kind of like lean over, hey, what's the play? When you're a quarterback and you call and you forget the play, I would just check off at the line. I'd run my own play.
I didn't know you were the quarterback. When were you the quarterback?
All the way from sixth grade on. Not the best. I backed up Michael Park, who was good.
Michael Park, did he go down to Ole Miss? Was he the punter at Ole Miss or something?
Rob was his brother. Rob punted at Ole Miss. Michael played baseball at Ole Miss and then finished at Tampa.
Okay.
And now so Michael lives in Tampa with his beautiful family. Shout out, Michael.
So you were actually the quarterback at MUS. That's really impressive. Or a quarterback. I had a good friend of mine who in fourth grade we met, right? And he told me, yeah, I play quarterback for ECS on their elementary school team. And it turned out it was a lie, but I thought that was so cool that he played quarterback.
No, you can even go to the commercial appeal. I scored against Northside.
Yeah, dude. Okay, so were you like me? Was getting the paper and seeing your name in the box score like absolutely one of the highlights of your life?
Absolutely.
Growing up?
Absolutely. And even like it didn't even just have to be me. Like going, because I grew up with a lot of guys that were good athletes, and like going through the paper on Saturday morning after Friday night and just seeing your friends' names, even that was exciting.
I miss. The having the agate and the high school box score in the paper so much because growing up, that's how I like learned the local
absolutely
was by reading the paper, and then you learn these names and then they get recruited, and so you know there's like an entire generation of basketball players who were coming up several years ahead of me who I like followed as if they were like actual like big time college or NBA players because I saw their name in the paper all the time. And then when I got a garbage time three against St. George's or something in a varsity blowout.
There you go.
I saw my name in the paper the next morning. It was like, I made it. I got my name.
There
in the
is
paper,
proof that I did. I'm not lying.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, they, you know, it was that. And then my my results in the Overton Park Junior Open.
We still that's now. Yeah, that's a big time tournament now, because after the remod. At
it's always been a big time tournament.
Well, yeah, I mean, but I mean, it's like it's even bigger now. Like, I feel like they've made it more like a regional thing rather than it was just like kids inside the loop that play that.
Yeah, I still got a fourth place trophy somewhere in my mom's attic from the late 90s. So
I mean, it was there was nothing. And then when you cross the bridge, like you, imagining you were at the Swolken Bridge in St. Andrews, like, oh yeah, this is big time.
Well, it's a rite of passage at Overton
Absolutely.
Park. That seventh hole.
Oh yeah.
When you get to the age where you can hit it over the ditch, because Overton is where I learned how to play, and you know I was probably 7 or 8 years old before I could consistently drive the ball over that ditch. And my first birdie I made on number 6, which is now like a par 3.5 since the remodel. So it's one of those where they made it a 3 or a 4.
Is 6 the one that goes up then down? Like you've got
200 yards.
I still don't know what to do with those half pars. It's like what is it 3? That's like a par 3.5. It's like if I make par, was that a birdie? Like how do I count that?
So you're thinking of number 4, which used really absurdly long par 3 for Overton Park. It's like, what are we doing here? So that one I like the 3.5. Number 6, I feel like they've cheapened my first ever birdie because I still have like the scorecard from the day I made my first birdie, and it was on number 6, which at the time was a par 4. Well, since the remodel, they're like, it's just a par 3.5. So like, I feel like my first ever birdie has been retroactively diminished.
I'm with you on 4, but now it's like the tee is always up. And so it's just like a 7-iron. Like, I'm not even a long golfer. And it's a 7-iron. It's like, that's not a par 3.5. Like, it's like, you're right. From all the way back when you've got like, if it's like 240 yards, like that's fine. But it's like, all right, we've bored enough people with golf. Wanted to discuss a few things. So we had Grizzlies last night against the Lakers, but I wanted to start with a couple of things I've been noticing, Cobb, particularly on Twitter. So, of course, we are in peak announcing that you're leaving Twitter season. I do love the narcissism of announcing that you're leaving Twitter on Twitter. Like, it's fine if you want to leave. Like, if you got your views and whatnot, you want to leave, that's fine, so be it. It's like, we don't need the announcement. Like, you're not all heroes. Like, thank you. Secondly, I don't know if you've been noticing this trend, and I'm betting you do since you went to the University of Tennessee, and I feel like a lot of Vols fans have been doing this. Cobb, thanks to Tuesday, we've got tweeting out what somebody's best win on Twitter season. Like, I've seen Penn State's, like, the strength of schedule and, like, maybe SP. That's the thing. It's like you can always tell, like, how nerdy someone is based on, like, where are they using the number, like, is it SP plus? If you get SP plus, you got a true nerd out there that's like, this is like, show me their best win. Then people that are just doing it based on like strength of schedule. Then it was, I saw this one. I liked this. The record of every team that I think it was Penn State was playing. Cause I think maybe the new one is Penn State's not beating anyone with a winning record. Is that the new one?
Yeah, that's one of them. You
love
get
it.
A lot of that about Texas.
Love it.
A lot of that about Penn State.
You're right, Texas. Texas was another one. Yes.
And a lot of it about Indiana, too.
Yeah.
And hey, Jeffrey, the Tennessee fans, I can attest. I know a lot of them, right? They are preparing their pitchforks. They are in the garage sharpening the end of those pitchforks, and they're getting ready for next week when, after Tennessee loses to Georgia, the committee no longer respects head-to-head and has Tennessee slotted below Alabama. And it's gonna be juicy.
See,
and then when that final selection day comes out, if Tennessee is left on the wrong side of it, can you imagine? You thought Shiano Sunday was cute.
Yes. Okay, we're gonna talk about that game in just a minute. I'm not convinced that Georgia offensively is good enough to just like blow out Tennessee, like absolutely punk them. Dog walk them, whatever metaphor you want to use. I do think, though, if they do that, I think that it's going to be interesting because, yes, maybe they'll put Alabama ahead of Tennessee, but I think they could put Georgia back ahead of Alabama and Ole Miss, both the teams that beat Georgia.
You might be right. They respected head-to-head.
And then, like, literally, Georgia could go...
But-
what would be awesome, though, is if, like, Texas has, let's say Texas has an uninspired win in Fayetteville. Could two-loss Georgia, if they like, have a big win, could they go back to being the top of the SEC?
If strength of schedule matters, then yeah, because Georgia's strength of schedule is far and away the best right now. My problem with the rankings is that it feels like who you lost to is what matters the most.
And when you how you lost. Rankings. Was it a close loss? It's not,
yeah, right?
It's not just who you lost. Because weirdly, Ole Miss gets credit for losing to Kentucky, who it's very conceivable Kentucky goes 1-7 in the SEC. The one win is against Ole Miss. But because it was a three-point loss, it's almost like it gets dismissed.
For now, but if you get down to Selection Day and Tennessee and Ole Miss are right there on the bubble, boy, that loss at Arkansas is going to haunt Tennessee. Boy, that home loss to Kentucky is going to haunt Ole Miss. Like, I think one of those two teams could very easily get left on the wrong side of this college football playoff bracket with those losses being the reasons that the committee uses.
All right, we're going to talk more about that when we get into Tasty Menu. This is the third trend that I've noticed going around. Coaches are complaining about game times a lot. Have you noticed this? Elko this week was complaining. I weirdly kind of get Elko's deal is, hey, we're playing the freaking, you know, we're playing New Mexico State. This is the bye game. Like, and we're like, normally when you get this late in the year, people want the bye game early so that they can hit the ground running like on Sunday. And so I kind of get what he was saying, but it's like Kiffin was griping. Although I think Kiffin was actually politicking, the Ole Miss fan base has collectively been griping about the lack of night games, particularly SEC games. And I think Kiffin was actually kind of playing to the crowd a little bit. So, but I've noticed this a lot more people, like coaches, complaining about game times. And then you have the like oddball banana land story that my buddy Ryan Glasspiegel broke this week. Do you see how Big Noon came to be?
How did it come to be?
So everyone, I think, or at least I did, I made the assumption Fox decided, hey, there's a weakness in the television schedule on Saturdays in that nobody's putting good games at Saturday. We're going to put our good games at Saturday, and we're going to make that a thing. That was always my assumption. Well, Glasspiegel's report, which was, like, the semantics are that's what ends up happening, but the reason why they selected that was not out of altruism or not shrewdness. Michigan and Ohio State basically demanded, like, after, it's like after October 1, they can basically say no to any night game they want. They have the power, and this was negotiated in the contract, and some other schools have a little bit of power, like I think it was Michigan State and Penn State. Wisconsin, they have a little power, but not at the same level that Michigan and Ohio State do. And essentially, Fox is like, well, if you're not going to let us put the Ohio State-Michigan game on at 6:30 or 7, whatever, let's say 8 Eastern, well, we're just not going to even do that. We're going to create this window because you won't let us put games in primetime.
And here we are now. So it's kind of almost by accident.
Correct.
Noon has become the premier window in college football
for the Big Ten. It's still, we're seeing now that ABC has complete control of the SEC, that 6:30 game has been absolutely killing it because now because it used to be, I think more times than not, the 6:30 ABC game was either like a ACC game or like a Big 12 game. Sometimes like a Big Ten game, but now because the ESPN had the rights to the second SEC game after CBS picked, and so they would put like their 6:45. That was always the SEC game. So now that the SEC's on network, it's been absolutely like crushing it.
Well, from a fan perspective, the night game is still far and away preferable because you get all day to tailgate, you get all day to watch other games, and yeah, like you get home late or you get back to your hotel late or whatever, but like it's an entire full day of enjoyment for the most part, and then you're really tired at the end. But if the game is at noon or 11 central in a lot of cases for us, then it's like, you know, you got to wake up at the crack of dawn, you got to come in the night before. Like, I don't know, the evening game to me is still like that premier game. And like, you think about Tennessee, you think about Knoxville and some of the home field environments they've had this season. You don't get that at noon. So, like, I'm still a fan of the night games. I don't care what these coaches say. I think college football is best at its best under the lights. And, like, the big noon stuff, whatever. Like, they found something that works for them. Fine. Let them have it. I still think the night game is the premier college football spot.
If you're talking about atmosphere at the game, I don't even think this is a contest. Like, to me, it's use even the NFL as an example. When you watch the noon windows on Sunday, it's not like that they're bad environments. You can just tell, like, all right, it looks like a noon environment where everyone's either kind of hungover or kind of just like getting there. It's noon, and like it's just usually pretty stale. But most of the times when you get the primetime games, like, oh yeah, there's atmosphere. And it's kind of the same idea. And to your point, I've always said maybe LSU doesn't get enough credit for branding itself. There's no question Tiger Stadium's an amazing atmosphere. But it always gets elevated because they branded it. It's like Tiger Stadium at night is a thing, so they get all the night games.
Some of that luster be falling off after what happened to them this past weekend, though. That was embarrassing, man.
Doggies.
Take that type of home loss. I mean, what's EA going to do on their toughest places to play ranking next year?
How awesome was that, though, when Brian Kelly was complaining about Alabama blitzing at the end?
Oh, dude, that is sad.
While he had his starters in. He was mad because he couldn't, like, score a garbage touchdown.
And we're at a point in time where style points matter. Style points matter in November when you're talking about a two-loss team like Alabama trying to get into the 12-team playoff. Margin of victory is going to matter. It's going to influence these metrics. So Alabama has no reason whatsoever to call off the dogs just because they're beating the crap out of LSU.
Well, and especially when you consider it's a new coaching staff that's had a bit of a rocky start. Like, they've had, like, everything. Like, it's been like the ultimate emotional roller coaster. You have, like, the Georgia game, and then you have the Vanderbilt game. Like, and then you have beating the crap out of LSU on the road, like, absolutely embarrassing them. And then you have the Tennessee game. Like, it's for them, it's been quite the roller coaster. So it's like he needs style points not only for the committee, he needs style points for his fan base.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to go back to your first trend that you've noticed.
All right.
I've noticed it too. What's it going to take to get you to fire up a Blue Sky account?
So, hand up. I've been seeing Blue Sky and people referencing it until I didn't start doing the math. I thought it was Blueski. Like, I've been seeing Blueski everywhere. And so I was like, and then it clicked with me. Oh, that's what Blue Sky is. I don't know about you. I view social media like I view fantasy football teams. I would like to get rid of. Like, I would like to contract. Contraction of social media rather than adding new ones.
Brother, I'm struggling just to, like, keep up on Twitter anymore. And, you know, it's just not as fun as it used to be. Now we got to do Blue Sky, all this. Like, I'll tell you what, though, man. Between the last election and this election, I deleted Facebook. And let me tell you, brother, that was one of the best decisions I've ever made. Because all these people right now out there are just, you know, at the whims of whatever the Facebook algorithm is showing them. And they think the whole world is in turmoil. And they think, you know, their friend from high school hates them because they voted for somebody else. And brother, I just hadn't been a part of any of that. I'm not on Facebook at all. I don't see any of it. And then I don't look at the For You page on Twitter. I just look at following, which is 95% sports. And so, like, you know, I still read, like, the Wall Street Journal and stuff, so I know kind of what's going on out there, but, like, I'm not getting it from Facebook, and let me tell you, that has been phenomenal for, like, just my sanity.
So, I was never all that active on the book, so I've seen, like, some people try to, like, reach me on Facebook. That's the worst way to reach me. Like, my DMs are open, so you can send if you need to, like, get a hold of me, because I check it, like, I don't know, monthly at best. Like, it's like, I'll see, like, an email or something, like, all right, I'll go check it now. So I've not been on it, but it's funny you mention that, because on election night, Aaliyah was like, my wife was basically saying, like, she got on Twitter and she's like, I don't know, this is kind of fun. And I'm sitting there looking at her like, are we on the same Twitter? I was like, this is wildly
probably
annoying.
Not.
But she's like, well, it's way better than Facebook. And so it's like, oh, if your unit of measurement is Facebook, I can see that you would think this is way better. But it's still not great. But my bigger deal is I just remember when people were first trying to do the F Elon, and then they went to Threads, and I'm just sitting there going, like, wait a minute. I understand there's probably some gripes about Elon, but can we act like, are we really acting like Zuckerberg's the hero we need? I was like, that was blew my mind. I was like, this is like, that was like when you realize like, okay, everybody's just lost their mind. Like, it's just, it's all that. So,
well, Elon is bringing SpaceX to Memphis, allegedly.
No, Grok, he's his AI supercomputer.
Oh, is that okay? Yeah.
Yeah. And listen, if he's going to clearly be, if he's clearly going to take advantage, if he's going to take advantage of supporting Trump, like, I don't know, man, if Memphis can get another couple billion out of this, like, I'm win-win. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. If it works out for Memphis, great. But if Twitter implodes, like, I would actually be okay with that.
I feel like we've been waiting for Twitter to implode for like a decade.
Yeah. What you're seeing is like this trend that you brought up. You're seeing all the big J journos going over the blue sky, right? A lot of my sports reporter friends who I follow are over there now. And I've had an account over there for like a year. Man, I just get exhausted thinking about trying to like post all my stuff somewhere else and like engage with other people. Like, it's just social media. I got social media fatigue and I'm not even all that active.
Oh, I'm with you. I do think you bring up a great point. If I find myself reading Twitter and I'm like having an emotional reaction, I'm like, oh, I must be on the For You page.
Yeah. They do a good job. Like they know what's going
to
hook you.
Well, so that was always Mark's theory, is that someone needed to write a version of Twitter for Ja that wouldn't allow him to go look at the For You. But I'm not saying that's not a part of it. I think, though, what gets Ja more than anything is Ja just searches his name. So, and then Ja sees, like, NBA Twitter doing what NBA Twitter does, which is, like, Ja Soft, like, Ja Sharp. Like,
you wouldn't believe how many athletes do that and how many coaches do that. I get all the time. I'll tweet an athlete's name, you know, in a story or a coach's name, whatever, and they'll like it. Or they'll even DM you in some cases. You wouldn't believe like how sensitive people are to what. Who am I, man? Right? Like, what do you care what I have to say? Like, you're out here playing sports at the very highest level of your craft, and like, yeah, it's bizarre.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, let's get into a little tasting menu, and then we're gonna break a little bit early because Eric's gonna, the team bus leaves, I think, LA at 3 Central. So tonight, we got Commanders, Eagles, and I'm in that weird spot where these are two teams in the division, but it's just like priority number one for me is like die, Eagles, die. So go Commanders, although I think the Eagles are kind of, I think as they get healthier, they're starting to like get it together, and they're starting to look like they're the second best team in the NFC. With that being said, I think Jalen Hurts has lost, he's 0-7 in his last 7 home games ATS, so go Commies tonight. Then we, of course, have the barn burner at Tulsa. And on our new ESPN segment that I've been referencing on Thursday, Dan Mullen eats. He was eating, it appeared, baked beans today in Tulsa. So you got ECU in Tulsa. Who wouldn't want to watch that? Only one NBA game. It's Mavs and Jazz tonight on NBA TV. The only other things I could think of that were remotely interesting in college basketball, you had Grand Canyon taking on Arizona State. It's like battle of like legendary player family coaches. So you got Hurley. You got Hurley versus Bryce Drew. So you have that. And then LSU at K-State. Like, I'm in favor of playing non-conference games on the road, like at home and homes. And so I at least will tip my cap to that. But I didn't see a lot of good college basketball either.
Yeah, it's a lackluster Thursday. But hey, I guess this gives me a good reason to finally kind of get that, my Amazon Prime Video situation.
Yell at your wife what the code is. Like, send me the code.
Hopefully my yelling doesn't send her into labor. Yeah. And we'll watch the Commanders and the Eagles. That's a fun game, though, because
absolutely,
that's a rivalry. And it's not, in recent years, it hasn't always had a lot of stakes attached to it, at least not for both sides at the same time, right? Like, now both teams are good. Both teams are fighting for the division. Jaden Daniels versus Jalen Hurts. I mean, in terms of NFL interest, this one is very, very high up there for me. Plus, hey, maybe Kenneth Gainwell Jr. will do something.
Commanders play fun games, too. So like, there's that as well. All right, let's go to Friday. It's not really a great football slate, but I wanted to talk about this briefly. So Giannotto mentioned to me a few weeks ago, whenever whenever USA Today writes about the Jake Paul Mike Tyson fight, he said it does like Super Bowl numbers. Like it's insane. He's like, even if it's like a nothing story, he's like, it goes bananas. Can you think of another sporting event that clearly the actual interest versus mainstream attention has ever been further apart?
Combat sports are like that, though. Like, I guess that's CBS true. Even sometimes the numbers are way skewed in a way that you wouldn't think, because there's not a ton of places to get that information. Like your common sports app might not have a tab that gives you the schedule or the time of the fight or whatever. And if you can quickly Google that information and find it on a website, you're probably going to click on that website. So, yeah. But, you know, you think about the names there, Jake Paul and Mike Tyson. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of people searching around and trying to figure out how they can watch that thing.
Yeah, I think also both of the Pauls, you can hate on them all you want, but like by all means, they clearly know how to like work the system. Like they're
you count Chris Paul in that equation too.
Well, that's true. He did always whine and get his way, but I'm talking about like they know. Like I feel like they were the first guys that like figured out the YouTube algorithm and like to build a fan base. And man, those guys, like their ability to make a dollar is admirable. Like they're both of them to me. Like you can dislike them all you want, and like I'm here for some of the legitimate criticism, but it's like those guys know what they're doing. All right, let's quickly get to Saturday. Utah, if Colorado's gonna get beat, I don't think it's this week. I think it's next week. I think Utah, the way that Utah was whining after that BYU game, that implied to me like, oh, they're done and they have to go back to Zach Wilson's brother again, and he's
yeah, I think
not good.
Utah is out of gas, and Colorado continues to illustrate that they are something close to a complete team. I don't think they're elite defensively. I don't think they're elite on the offensive line, but they're good enough. That's all you have to be when you have Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders, not to mention three or four other really high caliber wide receivers. I think Colorado's legit. I think we're sleeping on them. I think they deserve to be ranked where they are, and I think they're a legitimate threat to win the Big 12 because, yeah, look, BYU is undefeated. Okay, we get it. But do we really think they're all that much better than Colorado, right? Like, I don't.
I didn't get a lot of preseason stuff right. I do feel a little vindicated because I was pretty high on Colorado simply from this. I understand people want to hate on them. Although, weirdly to me, it's like now that they're good, it feels like they're getting less attention than ever. But you knew in most games, as long as both of these guys were healthy, they were going to have the best offensive player, the best defensive player, who happens to be the same player, and then they were going to have the best quarterback in almost every game they played. And so you can kind of win in college football with that, especially if you're in a league like they are where there's not rosters that are immensely more talented than the others. So if I just say best player and best quarterback, I'm going to be pretty good. And to me, like that makes sense. Here's the other thing, though, I wanted to discuss with you. We've also, in this window, got Texas and Arkansas. Do you think Arkansas has anything in the tank to make this interesting?
Yes, because it's Texas. It's Texas coming to their place. It's hard to really properly articulate to our generation of fans what that rivalry meant for the majority of the 20th century.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because remember back in SEC media days, Steve Sarkisian did articulate this, and this is one of my favorite exchanges of the year. Sarkisian had the comment that he thinks Arkansas fans hate Texas more than they like themselves. That's not the best comment. The comment was, when Sam Pittman was asked about Steve Sarkisian's comment, he said, quote, "I'd say he's probably right."
There you go. So if there's anything left in the tank for Arkansas,
rivalry week early,
down and they're gonna find it, man. Like this is that spot. And like maybe Quinn Ewers was right when he said we're kind of everyone's Super Bowl. I don't think that they're everyone's Super Bowl, but they're probably Arkansas's Super Bowl. Man, wouldn't it be great like if Texas suffered another loss? And then we could really have an honest discussion about who Texas has beaten and whether or not they deserve to be in the playoff discussion.
I agree. I still think that... Listen, I'd love for it. I'm an agent in chaos. I'd love for it. I still think that if that's going to happen, it's happening at Kyle Field. Although, if we've learned anything about this year, the weekends that you're not expecting it, you can, that's the weekends that you get just the absolute, how did that happen? All right.
And if you're looking for upset opportunities, that's high on the list this weekend.
All right. Then let's go to the afternoon slate. You got Penn State at Purdue, hooray, on network television. Virginia at Notre Dame, BC at SMU, with Castanellos apparently just taking his ball and going home. Like, he got benched and now he just like disappeared. That, yeah, LSU Florida game.
By the way,
sorry, go ahead.
Did you see Tom Brenneman?
He famous, winked to the camera.
Yeah. He was, and the starting quarterback for Boston College, Castellanos. Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah. I saw some people were getting mad about that. It's like, come on, man. The guy, like, lost his career. Like,
and he's calling, like, third-rate college football games on the CW.
It's like, I don't, like, that was, when people were, like, I was like, the world sucks right now. This LSU-Florida line is weird, right?
LSU, you would think, would be a higher or a more significant favorite in this game, especially because Lagway is still listed as questionable for this game.
Now, I think he practiced, whatnot. Okay. All right. Also in this window, we're all in agreement. South Carolina needs to put Missouri. Like, we gotta stop this. Like, just
please.
Just somebody put them out.
Yes. Did you see Drinkwitz after their game? Saying,
man, is he?
We're still in the playoff hunt. I said it. No, you are not, man.
As someone who appreciates like outstanding work in the field of outstanding achievement in the field of trolling, there's something about when he trolls that I don't find as funny.
Oh, dude, he's so cringy. And I realize people don't like Shane Beamer, but I like Shane Beamer. I would love to see Shane Beamer just completely just wipe the floor with Missouri and with Eli Drinkwitz, man. Drinkwitz is just insufferably dorky. I mean, it's great for content, but golly, I couldn't imagine being a Missouri fan and like having to listen to that guy and like talk myself into supporting him.
I guess when just like, in a weird way, I feel like they overachieve under him. Like last year, I didn't really think that was a 10-2 team, but like I give them credit. Like they won some big games, and they won big games in like kind of ways that you have to attribute to coaching. It's like, maybe that's what's happening here, but it's like, I don't know, man. It's tough. All right, let's quickly get to the big one that we were talking about. And then late night, we have Kansas BYU. If you're an SEC fan and you're in one of these camps, like you are rock chalk all the way. Like that's who you're rooting for. But Georgia, Tennessee. So here's kind of how I look at it. And I want your thoughts. If I'm Georgia, and I know I've struggled up front in the ways that they have, which is blocking and going up against athletic defenses, I don't exactly think, like, after you just played Ole Miss, that the Tennessee defensive front is some type of welcome change. Like, they're pretty nasty themselves. I just kind of think this is, I don't think either offense is going to be, like superb. I just think this is going to be kind of a rock fight.
I think that's Georgia's path.
Yeah,
too. It's to slow it down, make it a rock fight, limit the number of possessions in the game, because when you do that, you limit the number of opportunities Carson Beck has to commit turnovers, which I think is probably their best bet. And then Tennessee with Nico a little banged up, Dante Thornton, he's their top deep ball threat. He's questionable. Dylan Sampson took a lot of hits, 30 carries last week. That was a career high. And he's not on the injury report, but is he 100%? Like, so I've got questions about that. Line still feels a little odd to me,
yeah.
The fact that we're hovering around a 10-point spread here with Georgia. But, I mean, that may just be a product of circumstances and situations. Situation being, you know, Georgia hadn't lost at home since 2019. Georgia hadn't lost consecutive games since 2018. Tennessee has lost 7 straight against Georgia, all by 14 points or more. Like, it might just be some of those...
Well, and
historical factors.
And what we've kind of seen this year, it's like, all right, the team that really needs the win more, and I'm not saying Tennessee doesn't need this win, because as you point out, Tennessee fans are getting pre-mad about if they were to lose to Georgia and the head-to-heads and bam and everything. But I just really feel like Georgia knows, like, we already have 2 losses. Like, we cannot take that third, despite the fact we have the number one strength of schedule. And I think what we've been seeing is like, it's kind of NFL-y. It's like, all right, hungry dog runs faster, and people are banking on that. But man, when I first saw the line, I was thinking, oh, that means Nico's not playing when I first saw the line. But then Bud Elliott on the Cover 3 podcast this week said, was like, Well, I think this line tells us Nico is playing, because if he weren't, Georgia would be closer to 14. And I'm like, whoa, okay. I just don't know if Georgia has enough firepower to like really, really rout Tennessee, unless Tennessee routes themselves with like pick sixes and like giving them super short fields. But if Tennessee's able to make them go the length of the field, like, I don't think this becomes just like some type of blowout.
I think the expectation among the odds makers in Vegas must be that we're going to get a vintage knockdown Georgia defensive effort, a la what we saw from them against Texas, and that Kirby Smart's been, you know, up there, you know what, this week over all the short and intermediate passes they gave up to slot receivers for Ole Miss, and that he and Glenn Schumann are going to have a masterful defensive game plan dialed up to stop a Tennessee offense that, let's be honest, hasn't been great and is a little banged up. And that this Georgia defense might just completely dominate the game. That's the rationale that I can come up with for why Georgia is so heavily favored. Because there's been nothing really that we've seen from Georgia that would make sense in any other way for them to be so heavily favored in this game. So I think that the expectation is just that we're going to get an absolutely dominant effort from that Bulldogs defense.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Eric's going to join the program. We'll talk to him about the Grizzlies last night. Also, big one tomorrow night, also again on national TV when they take on the Warriors' first cup game. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, so we'll have new floors and everything. We'll do that next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
That music means we welcome to the program the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer Eric Hasseltine. Grizzlies tomorrow night, taking on the Golden State Warriors, first cup game, pregame at 8:30, tip-off with Eric at 9 p.m. Eric, I guess let's start with last night.
Sure.
There's like a legit rivalry, right, between the Lakers and the Grizzlies. Like, you can tell that game has some juice.
Yeah, they don't like each other.
Yeah. I think that's good.
They don't like each other at all. The Lakers don't like the Grizzlies because they think they're the young kids that don't respect the things that they've done, even though with this group, which was supposed to win multiple championships, they won one in the COVID year, which a lot of people, you know, want to say put an asterisk next to. I'm not one of those because I think I don't care what you did. You went through the playoffs. It's like the 50 game year when San Antonio won their first against New York. I was like, oh, put an asterisk next to it. Why? They were 40-10, 50 games in. They were going to be the one seed. They were awesome. Like, stop. But that's just the way people are. But, you know, LeBron thinks that the Grizzlies talk too much, and so does AD. And, you know, they ramp it up. They 100% do. There's no question. So, And the Grizzlies ramp it up. And this whole notion of every game's the same when players try to tell you that's a bunch of baloney. Like, guys get ramped up for different games. It's why sometimes guys come out flat against teams you think you're just going to go out there and beat for whatever reason, which, you know, we want to think that you go into every game thinking we got to respect our opponent, but that's not reality. People are people. And humans have these, you know, thoughts and emotions, and these are the things that happen. So, yeah, it makes it more fun. I think the Grizzlies feel a tad disrespected, you know, overall. And that's fair. You know, you look at how much love some of the bigger market teams get when the Grizzlies are playing top-notch basketball. They're still kind of like the, oh, yeah, I guess we should throw them into the highlight package thing. And that's – they're a fun team to watch. But I've seen this before. I saw it with Sacramento. That rivalry was – when I was there, that rivalry was very real. That was when Kobe and Shaq were in L.A., and now you see it with this group, and that's just kind of the way it is. Look, they're a bell cow franchise, and when you're in that position, every team in the league looks at you as a benchmark, whether you're good or bad. If you beat the Lakers, you did something. And same with I still think the Bulls are there. The Celtics are more so there. I've never quite understood the Knicks other than that they're in New York because they've won one title, but they're the Knicks. And, you know, everybody thinks, oh, every player will want to go to the Knicks. That's not happening. They should be really good this year, but right now, 11 games in, they're a game under 500. So, you know, all this stuff kind of plays itself all out. And, you know, LeBron is LeBron. And last night you could see that he got hot at something, and you could just see he kicked it into a different level. And the Grizzlies should have known that was coming, and they didn't for whatever reason. And then, you know, fourth quarter came, and these guys are, you know, they're coming for you. And I just thought a couple of disconnected plays defensively led to open threes in that fourth quarter. And then you go back, and little things matter throughout a game, and teams that have been there before take advantage. Case in point, you have the ball, shot clock turned off. You travel because you try to go too quickly when you didn't have to. And LeBron walks down, and you just leave him wide open from 27 feet. Well, then instead of a 9-point deficit, it's 12 at half. Look where the game finished. That three should have never happened, should have never even occurred. But, you know, you were trying to make a play, and I get it. It's not like Scottie tried to travel. But those are the mistakes that when you make those teams like that, whether they're great or just good or just average, when they have guys that have been there, they make those plays. And I remember even telling Michael, during the break, I really hope that play does not come back to haunt them later. And I feel like it did. It really did.
All right, Eric. So we see Jay Huff step into the starting lineup last night.
Yeah.
You also have Brandon Clark and Zach Edey, very effective fives in certain situations. Do you think there will be one player from that group arise and lay a permanent claim to that starting center position, or do you kind of see it being on a game-by-game basis and matchup-based?
Yeah, I haven't asked, and I was kind of curious as to whether they were trying to protect Zach from picking up fouls quickly against Anthony Davis. I think that spot is, in my opinion, Zach's to either earn or, you know, grow into. Brandon Clark has always been a guy that he prefers coming in off the bench. At least that's what he said. I don't know if that he's just saying that because that was the situation. Jay Huff, I don't know what it was. It was just one of those games. He got good looks. Ball didn't go in. He's been fantastic. I don't think he felt pressure being back in LA, the team that had him for a minute. I don't think that that's who he is, but I honestly think it's Zach's, because when Zach is there, like, you saw what the problems he caused for Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis ended up getting in foul trouble because he's physical. Guys don't like that physicality in this day and age. Zach is that type of player. And I think his size enables Jaren to go do more on the perimeter. And then, you know, if you have two bigs stretching the floor that can shoot the three like Huff and Jackson together, then there's nobody in the middle. And you got to have somebody in the middle that draws attention. If you don't, it changes things. And just my opinion. I mean, I'm nowhere near the level of expertise the coaching staff is, but I just feel like when you have a guy down there that if you leave him, he's either going to gobble the offensive rebound or a guy can just lob it to the rim and it's a guaranteed 2 points. You can't extend the defense as far as you would if you have two bigs that are going to be out there looking to shoot a three. And I'm not saying that's all Jaren or Jay do, because they've obviously scored on the interior. But I just think when that run came in the second half, Zach was out there for a big majority of it. It's nothing against Jay Huff. He's been fantastic. So I just think when you look at putting Jay Huff, Brandon Clark in that second unit, you have two bigs that can come in. You know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Santi when Gigi comes back. Is Santi going to stay in the three spot? Is Marcus going to keep coming off the bench? Jalen Wells has been terrific. You still don't have Desmond Bane or John Moran. I mean, that's the thing that got me last night, is the Lakers had their full complement, and they're undefeated at home. And the Grizzlies are missing two of their top three scorers, probably, and they haven't had Gigi all year, so that doesn't really count. But that's a massive impact, and you push them to the wall. I think it shows who's got better depth. I think it shows who's got the better system. I think it shows who's got the better game plan. And I'm not knocking J.J. Redick. It's his first year. But I think that shows a lot, that you were down to that team, and it looked – I mean, Jeffrey and I were texting during one of the breaks. I was like, this could get ugly.
Yeah, we both thought, like, oh, boy, here we go.
Yeah, because the emotions and the intensity, and this group just flipped the – I don't – you know, give a you-know-what switch, and got themselves right back in it. And that's the depth that they have, and they just keep coming at you. That's why I think this system was installed. Their defense is good enough, and their offense, if they put that kind of pressure on you, their defense feeds off of that. Now, they always want to say they're defensive first, but if their offense is not clicking, they're not making shots, then their defense struggles. We saw that in the first part of the first half. When they started making shots, their defense got a lot better. They were able to come back down, because not a lot of teams are like them that'll pull it out of the net and just go run right back down your throat. So, I mean, it's a fun team to watch. Obviously, last night stung a little bit because you felt like that was one you could have gotten. That guarantees this road trip is a success. That guarantees that unless you flex in a game in that NBA Cup window, if both teams didn't make the quarterfinals, you win the season series with the Lakers. You still get them back at home, but this could be a team you're jockeying for a 5 or 6 seed with, or even a 6 or 7 or a 7 or 8, or even higher potentially. Who knows? But, you know, that I think it spoke a lot, and there are going to be growing pains when you have two rookies seeing significant minutes and two guys who were basically two-way players last year seeing significant minutes until you get fully healthy. You're going to have some nights where little mistakes can cost you. And I think that happened last night, and it is what it is. I don't think there's anything to hang your head about. You went into the Lakers' house and pushed them to the brink. And it's funny being here today, everybody's talking about, because obviously LeBron gets his third straight triple-double, and that's phenomenal. He's playing, and he's just a freak of nature, as we all know. But when you factor in all that goes on, I mean, they're talking about it like last night they clinched a division title or something. I'm like, oh, okay, we haven't even gotten to game 15 yet. How many games are these guys going to sit out? How many games are these guys going to miss? And if either one of those guys is out of the lineup, they got problems. Now, Dalton Connect was fantastic last night. He was terrific. The one that impressed me most was he fed it. He had a look. Grizzlies closed out. He gave it to the post. They threw it right back to him, and he didn't even hesitate, and it was out of his hands in a millisecond. And that's not generally a shot a rookie takes. So maybe they have something there. Maybe they're figuring that out. They put Cam Reddish in the starting lineup. I think the guy that hurts them the most is D'Angelo Russell. And there were times where you're just like, all right, he's shooting that. I mean, that ball's not coming out of his hands when LeBron and AD were off the floor. So if you ask me right now, and I know you didn't, but I'm going to say, if you ask me right now who I'd rather have going forward, which roster, I would honestly take the Grizzlies. I think LeBron obviously is sensational. AD is playing at an MVP level. Overall roster, I'd take the Grizzlies. I'd take them every day.
All right, we're wrapping up with Eric Hasson because he's got to go get on the team flight as they will take on the Warriors tomorrow night. Weirdly, the Warriors and Grizzlies are kind of similar, right? both teams play a lot of guys. Like, we were looking at, you know, when everyone gripes about minute distribution, well, Steph's not playing, you know, Steph's right around that 30-minute total. Like, I feel like both these teams are pretty similar. Obviously, Golden State's got the better record, but in terms of style of play, they're pretty similar.
Yeah, they are. You know, I think for Golden State, that's the group that's trying to hang on to it and prove that it's not, you know, that losing Clay is not going to sink this run that they've had, that they still have capable players. I think they've pushed a lot of the right buttons. Kuminga coming off the bench is a phenomenal decision. You know, look, Draymond has heard all the talk, and Draymond's doubling down on being the bully right now, because that's what you do as you get older. Your athleticism, you know, wavers a little bit, and you can't feed off of that the way you have. So I think it's going to be a battle. I think Draymond's going to try to, you know, for lack of a better term, beat the crap out of both Edie, Jalen Wells, Edie Wells,
Huff
Jackson,
too, yeah.
Santi, you know, Huff, take your pick of any, especially the younger guys.
Yeah.
And just try to get in their head that way. So, I mean, look, it's Steph is still Steph. I mean, when you're not relying your game on just sheer athleticism, when you're relying on a skill set that includes magical ball handling and shooting that's next, you know, universe level, you can keep going for a while. Now, like, for them, it's always the other guys. Can you slow down Wiggins? Can you slow down De'Anthony Melton, who's playing well for them, who's been starting? And can you slow down Kuminga coming off the bench? Do you let get the guy like Tracy Jackson Davis, like get a double double just by being there, or, you know, a Kevon Looney hurt you somehow, somewhere, a Pajemski? They've got a good roster, and everybody thought their run was just straight up over. I think was dramatically underestimating, you know, what they've done to build it up. I thought they made the best move they made was moving off the Jordan Poole contract. And, you know, now you're talking about they've got themselves in a position. They had to make that decision about Clay. It's not going to be an easy night. That fan base is rabid. It's always electric in there. And it's a cup game. And they just showed what they can do in a cup game when they beat Dallas, who a lot of people thought would go in there and kind of take control of this pool by winning on the road at Golden State. If the Grizzlies win this one on the road at Golden State, now they've got control of their pool, because we're looking at what the Pelicans are doing. They're not playing very well, and you got the Nuggets in there. They're good, but can you catch the Nuggets maybe on a night on your home court? And if the Grizzlies were to win Friday, that sets up that Tuesday one where if they get that one, then they're in the driver's seat. They got to win one of the last two.
We still haven't won a game, right?
Yeah, no.
We're still searching for that first cup win.
Yeah. Look, Portland did it to Minnesota, too.
Yeah.
Portland did it to Grizzlies last year. And then not only did they beat Minnesota once, they beat them twice.
Yeah.
And that Portland team, after we left there, we were all like,
what just happened?
What is going on with them? They looked awful. And then they come back and sweep Minnesota. That's the way this league works. It's silly sometimes.
All right. Safe travels, my man.
Thanks, guys.
That is Eric Hasson. Again, you can hear the Grizzlies and the Warriors tomorrow night, right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Pregame will start at 8:30. Tip-off will be at 9 p.m. with Eric. Want to remind you that one of the best sales in town is going on right now, and that's Robert Irwin Jewelers Black Friday sale. You can buy gifts that give gifts. That means that every purchase of $299 or more, you will get a free gift. For example, you can get the 1/5 carat diamond hoop earrings in 10 carat white gold for $549 and get a free pair of JBL noise-canceling headphones. You can also get the Flexi Diamond Bangle bracelets. If you spend $9.99, you can get a free Nintendo Switch. Also, this is one of the peak engagement seasons that you can possibly have. If you can go get your engagement ring at Robert Irwin Jewelers and spend $4.99 or more, get a free 85-inch smart TV. You can buy with confidence and buy the RIJ way. You can take advantage of the meant-to-be guarantee if you do what I did, or what Connor did, where we did the custom-made engagement ring. You can do so with peace of mind. You have a full 365 days to return it if you're not satisfied for any reason. Full purchase price right back to you. Also, free ring sizing for life, the diamond trade-up options, and don't sleep on the Robert Irwin Jewelers free jewelry spa service for life. Take your rings in there. you come back and you get it, and it literally looks like the exact day you got it. I cannot recommend that service enough. And again, it's free with your purchase of an RIJ piece of jewelry. Black Friday sale going on now. See the store for details while supplies last. They also have free financing, bigger, brighter diamonds at better prices. 5 locations locally, or you can shop online at rijewelers.com. Cobb and I will also give our thoughts on that Lakers game. We'll do that when we come back on the list. Jason Smith also coming up during hour number 2. Stick around. You'll listen to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
This holiday, BMW has reunited 3 members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Left 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.